Thank you, Dr. McKay. I'd like to talk to you today about a portion of my DNA or my dissertation project, which involves trying to identify the sources of stable flies and possibly their dispersal habits. So stable flies are hematophagous pests. They have a wide host range to utilize of various animals and even humans. Both sexes require a blood meal. And oviposition will usually occur after three to seven blood meals. Stable flies will breed in various components. This includes spilled animal feeds, compost piles. The larvae will persist for about 13 days, and then adult eclosion occurs about 5 to 7 days after that. Stable flies are important economically, both in the dairy and cattle, beef cattle industries, where they result in reduced milk production and pounds of gain per day. But they're also a problem with humans in places like the Gulf Coast beaches of Florida, where they'll show up, pester tourists, and then the tourists leave. The reason I chose to study stable fly movement in Florida is because stable flies are big problems to other animals like horses. And in Florida, horses are a big part of the economy, so it's important to study their behavior. Stable flies are poorly studied on equine facilities, and this might be because it's difficult to determine the economic losses associated with these animals. We're not measuring pounds of gain or gallons of milk because we don't take these products from them. But costs are incurred through insect control and the diseases they cause, such as equine infectious anemia and habronemiasis, which we know as summer sores, which could serve as sites for secondary infections. One of my underlying questions is do Florida equine facilities provide the means for stable flies to persist in that area, or are they occurring as the result of dispersal from other animal systems? And one way we can answer this question is by determining the host they're utilizing. To do that, we can use polymerase chain reaction. And one of the first questions I had to answer was, can we even get DNA out of the fly? If we can't get DNA from the host out of the fly, there's no sense in doing this. So we did preliminary extractions using the Qiagen DNA-Z blood and tissue kits, and we conducted PCR targeting the cytochrome B gene of cattle in this first experiment. The gene sequences were obtained from GenBank, and we designed primers that were specific to cattle and not to stable flies, so we could just detect that host. The preliminary results of this experiment showed that we could get cattle DNA back out of the stable fly and that our primers were specific. And we know this because in the unfed fly sample, there are no amplification products shown. It also showed us that we could get host DNA out to 24 hours post-feeding. It's a little difficult to observe, but there is a faint band located in the 24-hour sample. The problem with this kind of test is stable flies take multiple blood meals and possibly from more than one host. So we could use things like DNA sequencing or conduct several PCR reactions that contained a primer set for each individual host. But multiplex PCR offers a solution where we can detect several hosts in a single fly using a single PCR reaction. I designed primers specific to horses, of course. I was looking at stable fly activity on horse farms. And then we used cattle as kind of our out group. If we're getting blood meals from nearby cattle facilities, then we know they're dispersing from those areas, dogs on site, and humans that work there as well. We again had to design primers. We did so targeting the cytochrome B gene of all these mammals, and we got the sequences again from GenBank, and we aligned them with Clostal. When you do that, you get a printout much like the one on the right there, where it shows you all the nucleotides in the sequence. And what you look for when you design a primer is a region like that. Everywhere there's an asterisk, that means the nucleotides are similar. What we're looking for is differences, so we can select for particular hosts. We designed them with the goal of being at least 100 base pairs apart, so they were easily distinguishable on gel electrophoresis. And we also only designed a universal reverse. That saves having to design four new host-specific primers. We checked them for primer compatibility, which includes things like similar melting temperatures. Now, when you design a multiplex system, you're hoping that it runs something like this picture demonstrates. You have a gene sequence indicated by the white bars, and then you design your primers, in this case the dog, horse, cow, and human, and you hope that they anneal in places that are different, such as indicated by these different colored arrows. So that when you get products amplified, in the case of the dog, you'd get a larger product from the annealing spot in the forward primer to the reverse than you would in the case of the human, where you'd get a smaller amplification product. When you run those on a gel, then you'd be able to easily distinguish them. The dog one being the larger product, migrating slower down an agarose gel. So we had to do a control experiment where we tested the primers just on blood alone. We took the fly out of the system just to make sure our primers were effective. So we tested DNA extracted from the blood of all four hosts and also a mixture. All primers were tested together in all reactions because we wanted to make sure that they were only selecting for the hosts that they were designed for. We evaluated a variety of temperatures and component concentrations to optimize our system. And the results of this experiment confirmed the primer compatibility. As you can see on the right there, indicated by the letters, the dog, the horse, cow, human, and a mix sample. And then again, our unfed fly as a control to make sure we didn't get any non-target amplification. So our primers correctly annealed to their specific hosts, and we also determined that touchdown PCR was the most efficient system for this PCR. What that means is you start at an annealing temperature that's very near the melting point of your primers, and then you decrease that temperature after every few cycles. Usually this results in bands that are more specific. So we moved on to the stable fly feeding experiment. We fed 15 3 to 5 day old females in 5 groups, one for each host, and then it included a 4-host mix. We also held them at 5 time periods, in 8-hour intervals up to a day, and then at two days. The DNA extractions and PCR was conducted similarly as previously described. And the blood feeding results of this indicate that even at 0 and 8 hours, we're still getting specific host detections, indicated again by the letters dog, horse, cow, human, and a mixed type at 0 and 8 hours. We used a 100 base pair molecular weight standard to verify the amplification products were those we designed them to be. We also got detections at 16 hours. They're still specific, but as you can see, the bands are much lighter in color, indicating that digestion is starting to take its effect. At 24 hours, our results become a little more inconsistent, and this is probably where we're really seeing the effects of digestion. These bands, indicated by the red arrows in the dog and horse, are there, but they're very faint. We can't see them for the cow, the human, or the mix. This could be due to physiological state. When I did that preliminary experiment, you remember, I got DNA from the host even at 24 hours, although it was faint. And so I went back and realized that I had taken flies out of the colony cages and didn't pay attention to which physiological state they may have been in. And so I went back to the colony cages, just real quick before I actually came to this meeting, and tested flies that were vitellogenic. I fed them just cattle blood and held them for 24 hours. And what you get is, I tested 6 flies, indicated by the C and the arrows in these wells. And we're not getting 100% detections still, but we are getting bands that are darker than those above. I used a horse positive control to make sure my PCR system worked, and then my master mix was clean. The implications of such an experiment are that we can use this type of work to indicate possibly the sources of stable flies in field studies. And this also kind of paves the way for microsatellite studies. If we can get host DNA from these flies, it's not unlikely that we can get microsatellite regions from those flies as well, indicating particular hosts on a farm that they fed on. What this does for us is that some animals might be more attractive than others, and we'll know. You know, you can look at a horse and see that it's covered in stable flies, but maybe you're not on that farm, and you can use this to detect, you know, maybe they're coming from farm B rather than farm A, and which animal they're coming from. This could lead to better management plans when you're talking about things like resistance. If you know where they're coming from, then you know what pesticides they've likely been exposed to. And this is more or less a novel technique, not in the sense that it's multiplex PCR, that it's blood meal analysis, but in the sense that we're doing it now in stable flies. And in the end, this could result in maybe happier horses, which leads to a less of an economic drain on horse producers. I'd like to acknowledge my committee members for their continued support and interest. Also, Dr. Ali Maruniak and Stacy Watts in the molecular biology lab where I do these experiments. Drs. August Battles and Charles Staples for the dog and horse blood. And then the Vet Ant lab crew at Gainesville. And I'd like to entertain any questions you have. Yes.
Do you think this has any implications for civil litigation involving pest species,
All right, the question was, do you think this has any possible uses in like civil litigation where you have flies migrating from or dispersing from agricultural sites into urban areas? And that's oftentimes a problem that we're running into now. Populations are growing and they're growing into urban, or urban communities are growing towards agricultural areas. So you have a lot of problems with flies dispersing into those areas. And I think that it would be very important to use something like this where you could determine that flies are coming from a particular farm. You know, if there's five farms out there, then the urban community might just be singling out one because of any kind of attitude they have towards that one in particular, rather than where the flies are actually coming from. Yes. Right. The question is how when I get a host detection in a fly, am I going to be able to use that to determine where the flies are coming from? That was the reason why I included cattle in my, we're just calling it our out group, is that I'm going to end up collecting flies just from my horse farms. And so if I'm collecting those flies from horse farms, and some of them or majority of them have blood from cattle in them, it doesn't necessarily mean they're coming from those farms, but it also means that they're using those as hosts and they're dispersing between the two farms, which could tell us that maybe we need to look over there for any stable fly breeding sites. Yes? That's a good question. How far do stable fly disperse after a blood meal? After a blood meal, they're not likely to disperse far. If you've ever seen an engorged stable fly like that, they can hardly get off the ground. A lot of times they walk. So that's the reason why I carried this test out to 24 hours, because at that point they use various physiological mechanisms to push as much water as they can out so that they can fly. And a lot of times they'll feed 2 to 3 times a day. And because they have painful bites, many animals shoo them. And so they'll move to other animals and possibly to other sites.